Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm and author of Investing Simplified, the book. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial show in America, with a financial advisor, an estate planning attorney, and a CPA to answer your questions for free, and is broadcast live from Portland, Oregon on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck with a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com. Or you can call him right now at 503-417-9595. That's 503-417-9595. Or for our long distance and podcast listeners, you can call toll free at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
Hey, good morning, Pacific Northwest. We've got a great show for you today. This is Chuck Price, President of Price Financial Group Wealth Management. A little bit later on the show, Kevin Stege, our local CPA with the Baker Colson CPA firm, and co-host will be calling in at the half hour. And as promised last week, we ran out of time. We're going to talk about the advantages of Oregonians moving to Washington and the tax breaks and the tax differences. So I had a ton of emails and calls of people who were disappointed last week that we could not get to that. But I promise you this week we will discuss it. And I know it's a very important thing to a lot of people that are at retirement age and thinking about retiring and making that move so they don't have to pay Oregon income tax on their earnings. So with that, today is the day that we have Dent Research. And on the line for me is Rodney Johnson, co-editor and partner at Dent Research with Harry Dent, and also co-editor of Economy and Markets. And Rodney, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Chuck. How are you?
Well, great. I'm going to start right off this morning. I'm going to hit you right with what everybody's talking about in America.
Okay.
And it's called tariffs.
Yep.
So what does Dent Research, I got to give a plug here. If you do not take the free newsletter, Economy and Markets, you are absolutely not even thinking about investing. If you're thinking about investing at all, you've got to get this free newsletter. I got to tell you, Harry's interview with the Germans was great. I'm just going to put that out there to the listeners. If you haven't seen it, you can come to my office. I'll be glad to give you a copy, but you got to sign up and get this information because it is priceless.
Well, we look at tariffs, Chuck, and we don't make a judgment call on them. We tell you how they work, and tariffs are basically programmed to say, "Hey, guess what? Someone is selling goods to our constituents too cheaply," and that's what it is, right? You're saying somebody abroad, be it the Chinese, the Europeans, the Canadians, whatever, is selling their goods too cheaply to Americans or American companies, and you want them to stop. And the premise is that they are selling it so cheaply that domestic producers can't compete with it. And so it drives out domestic producers. And steel is a good one, right? And so foreign steel is too cheap. Domestic producers can't compete. And so you put a tariff on the stuff coming in so that people here have to pay more. And that's the piece that a lot of people don't talk about, but it's the basic idea. And so when you do a tariff, what you're telling people is, guess what? You had a cheaper price on day one as an American. You're going to have a more expensive price on day two. And it goes to support those people in your country. Now, whether you want to do that or not as a consumer or a manufacturer, that's a whole different story. But what they mean is higher prices for locals to support an industry. And as I said, we don't make a judgment on it other than noting that, you know, if you're doing this, you are taking money out of your consumers' and your producers' pockets. It must be that way because they have to pay more for something than they did the day before. And so then it's a value judgment on your part whether or not you think it's worth it. As far as President Trump goes, as I wrote last week, I do not believe him to be principled on trade. I don't know what he's principled on, but it's not trade. He's a pragmatist. He looks to find the best deal. And so he did this because, as he tells everybody, he's a business deal maker. He believes that our trade situation is a bad deal, and he's going to do something about it. And the way you do it is by slapping your partner around for a little bit, and then you go backwards and try to backtrack to a position you find acceptable. And so I think this is an opening salvo and a negotiation. I do not think it's him standing on principle on steel or aluminum or anything else.
Well, I personally think that is Trump's persona. That's what he's done on every single thing he's done. He comes out blasting guns and giving a demanding performance and then backing back off and negotiating. And I'll tell you, one of the
books. He's written that in several
absolutely
books. And he has always told us, my wife says, and I do not mean that, you know, President Trump is crazy, but my wife says that people hold up their crazy card. Your job is to see it. People will show you through their actions who they are and how they're going to behave. And he has, since he entered public life, told us he's a deal maker. He has not said he is a principled conservative, a principled progressive, a principled anything, meaning he would stand on something without moving, forsaking all the rest. He doesn't do that. He says he's looking for the best deal in the situation. And so we should take him at face value because that's what's going on.
Well, he does have some fundamental values, though, that he does stick with. So, I mean, he has some fundamental values as far as, you know, personally. But I think you're exactly right. That is his operation, how he operates. He's always done it that way. And I don't think he's going to change just because he's president of the United States.
Me neither.
He's not going to change.
Like, he's going to change at all.
I think one of the things that most Americans feel, and certainly people in the Midwest and in Michigan and other parts of the country that have had manufacturing plants shut down over the years, and manufacturing has left America, and now some of it's starting to come back. I think that gives hope for a lot of people that maybe some good paying jobs are coming back. And back into America, because certainly we need them.
We do need them. We need the best paying jobs we can get for our population, and that's what we want to support. And in some instances, you can look at trade and say, hey, guess what? There is a supplier who is putting goods on the market at a price well below where they can be produced. And as I've noted, this is called China, right? For anybody looking, this is called China. They are still opening new steel plants when they produce more than 50% of the steel in the world, and they don't use what they have. They export it because they don't have enough use for it. So why would they keep doing it? Well, they do it so that they can put their own population to work. And if they dump it on the international market at a cheap price, they don't care. But there's already an organization out there to take care of this. It's called the World Trade Organization. And so we as a member are supposed to take our trade grievances to the World Trade Organization and say, hey, guess what? This is going on. Now, the WTO is not exactly an efficient arbiter of how all these things go, but it is out there to do that job. And so I think what he did, as you noted, is, you know, he takes a big stand on something and then tries to work back to what's reasonable. And as the steel producers showed when all this came out, you know, their stocks popped and they said they're adding shifts and they're going to add some people. It won't be a ton of people because of automation and things, but it will add to domestic manufacturing. There's no question about that. Now, does it pull away from manufacturing elsewhere on things like airplanes? And, you know, there's a story in the Journal this morning of the only beer keg manufacturer in the U.S. is laying off people. But they were a marginal producer to begin with. They were actually selling above the price of other products, and now the price of steel has gone up, and they flipped over the edge, and they can't make it. And so there's two sides to it, but maybe he'll get some motion and get us a better deal on some of these two-way trade situations that we have with, like, China.
Yeah, I really think that's what he's trying to do. And I think a dead giveaway was the fact that Larry Kudlow is joining him. And I know you know Larry Kudlow. And yep. I for one, was very happy to see that because I particularly like Larry Kudlow. And I think he has a good he has a position that is totally opposite than Trump on tariffs and trade.
He does, but you know they say Larry Kudlow at the end of the week kind of came around, and people are saying, "Well, you know, he just wants to be in the White House." I think he had a clear-eyed conversation with the president, who told him, "Look, what I'm doing is negotiating for a better place." And Kudlow essentially said he doesn't like tariffs as a form of trade barrier for an ongoing period, but he recognizes that they have value as a negotiating tool. So a really nice way of saying the same thing that you and I are.
Yeah.
And I like Larry Kudlow's points of view on most things. It tends to be more of a cheerleader than I'd normally, you know, deal with, but a really smart man. But Gary Cohn was a really smart man. And so we've had a couple of really good people in that role, and Gary Cohn did a good job. I mean, through his work and Larry Kudlow's work from outside, we got the tax reform. We've had a lot of regulatory rollback and just some good common sense things that are going on. And it's been good for the business environment. There's no question.
Well, speaking about rollback, I saw that also they have cut back more on Dodd-Frank. And many of us in the financial services industry wish they would just rip it up and throw it away. But Dodd-Frank has been one of the most costly thing to individual investors and brokerage firms all over America, at least. And it's been very costly. In fact, many broker dealers have had to hire a new attorney every year just to keep up with the regulations.
This is something, and I apologize to listeners before I launch into this darn thing, but this is inside baseball. I've been in this business for 31 years now, and so seen a lot of changes. And back in 99 and 2000, we saw Enron blow up. But people forget we also saw KMPG blow up, and they became Accenture. And we saw WorldCom blow up with Bernie Ebers in, I think, 2001, 2002.
Yep.
Before that time, the accounting firms were on the ropes because automation in accounting was putting auditors not out of business, but they were shrinking their importance in the world. And when you look at it, it's like, that's okay, because, you know, we become more efficient in one area, more productive, and we go to another area. And so the big six accounting firms that became the big four and now the big three and big two, they were actually kind of moving to the side. Dodd-Frank, and Sarbanes-Oxley, you know, before that, and then Dodd-Frank, became this incredible make-work program for all of these accounting firms that turned into regulatory compliance things that now they are the tail that wags the dog. A compliance officer or regulatory officer can come into anybody's office in this business and say, you need to change X. And if you don't, you're going to lose your job. Because these guys are the gatekeeper. They are like the TSA agent at the, you know, machine letting you get to your plane. It is amazing how much power they wield for a group that's supposed to be just telling you where the guidelines or, you know, the guardrails are. Instead, they tell you how to do business, and it's crazy.
Well, speaking about that, I got to take a quick break, Rodney, and we're going to come right back with more questions, and we're going to dig into the economy a little bit. And I've got some questions for you about the economy, but I want to say to our listeners, if you want to call Rodney and ask a question, just don't leave all the fun to me. Call 503-417-9595, toll-free 877-733-1011. We'll be right back in 1 minute.
We do investing simplified. Price Financial Group, wealth management.
Navigating through today's financial investment world can seem pretty scary. Now, here's the good news. Chuck Price, president of Price Financial Group Wealth Management, introduces a new revolutionary concept that will change how you invest now and in the future. It's called Asset Lock. Asset Lock monitors your investment accounts 24/7, 365, and alerts you when action needs to be taken. You know, they don't call Chuck Price the financial doctor for nothing. And now, Chuck Price offers Asset Lock. At Price Financial Group Wealth Management, we believe all our clients deserve to have asset lock monitoring their accounts. So call Chuck today or online at pfgwm.com and learn how you can get asset lock on your accounts today for free. Price Financial Group Wealth Management, because the smart investor knows what you don't know can hurt you.
Do Investing Simplified.
Call 503-3000. That's 503-3000.
This is our Spotlight on Business, where we bring you an expert on the latest in the financial world, from residential real estate to commercial property or to property tax relief. Buying or selling a business or residential property financing. Get your answers here. Now, here is our special guest.
Well, we got Rodney Johnson on the line with us. And just so people listening, that previous ad, that ad was a misnumber there. The number is 503-253-3000. So, Rodney, let's get back to the economy.
Sure.
How do you think the economy is going right now?
I think the economy is going as well as can be expected, and this is something, you know, that we've talked about for a while, Chuck. We've looked at modest growth and kind of bump along growth as the best we can expect in the economic winter season. And we see it as winter because the large group with the most money, being the boomers, are now squarely focused on putting away money, saving for retirement, and making sure that they can make ends meet. And so they're not out there driving a lot of big growth. And so the millennials are the next group to do it, but they don't have the money yet. And so they have delayed a lot of the big purchases that would kind of drive the economy further. And so the Fed has kept us above zero in GDP for years, but we've really been in 1.5 to 2% since just after the downturn. And that's actually typically seen as leading to recession, not leading to growth. And people keep telling us year after year, oh, we're about to break out. And no, we're not. Well, we have a much better climate for business under President Trump and the Republican Congress. People disagree on social issues and certainly things that are going on. I totally get that. But if you look at how it's allowing business to expand in terms of rolling back regulation, not putting on new regulation, which is a really big deal, the corporate tax reform, you have done a lot of things to improve business. And yet, GDP growth in the first quarter is probably going to be about 2%. That's with all of this good stuff happening. And so we're still of a mind that we are very guarded about it, and we don't think we're going to get the explosive growth. We're glad to see all the policies that, you know, help business grow as much as they can, but we still don't have that big driver of personal consumption, and we don't think we'll see it for another 4 to 5 years.
Well, one of the things that was really kind of a shocker to me, I had anticipated that the holiday season was good and business was booming, but retail sales was in the toilet.
And it's something that, you know, I know here firsthand. I live between Houston and Galveston in Texas, which was ground zero for the knock-on effect of Hurricane Harvey. It came ashore about 150 miles south of us, but then it drifted up to where we are, sat over us for 3 days, and dumped 51 inches of rain. Oh. And so what happened is we immediately, everybody who lost stuff, I would luckily did not, people immediately replaced their cars. 600,000 cars were lost in this area to Hurricane Harvey, and then they replaced all their personal goods, and so that pulled a lot of demand forward to the fall, and I guess it was late fall there in September, October, November, and then of course sales fell back to what we think of as the normal level in December, January, and February. And your point is well taken. People looked at the months coming into December and said, my goodness, look at how much spending is going on, this is going to be great. And when it fell back, people are scratching their heads saying, what happened? And it's like, well, I can tell you what happened. You know, we pulled some forward, and now we're back to what is that kind of modest bump along growth.
Yeah, I have some real concerns about the economy. And I know back in I believe it was November, Harry had said that there's a possible for a little pullback in January. And actually, I think on January 26th to the 5th, I think it dropped about 10.2%, the S&P did. And now it's come back, and I think it's still about 3 or 4% lagging behind that high that it hit. So it still hasn't bounced back.
And this is the biggest change, Chuck, that I think your listeners should be paying attention to. I know certainly you are, because you're a student of the markets to help your clients. But what we have done is we witnessed the change in the stance of the Federal Reserve, and you cannot overstate this. The Federal Reserve has been in a loosening, dovish, make everything go stance since basically August of 2008. Back when they took Fannie and Freddie into conservatorship at the federal government. And so they have been of the mind, please make this go. Don't let us fall into a deflationary spiral. Anything that will support the economy, we will do, which led them to take short-term interest rates to zero for 5 years. I mean, half a decade. Led them to buy $4.5 trillion worth of bonds. These are monetary experiments we've never seen in the history of our central bank and really around the world. And so they're now changing that stance, and they're not only raising short-term rates, which they've done a little bit, and they want to get back to 2.75%, they're also shrinking their balance sheet. They just started that in December. And so I have been telling people for, 6 weeks now, that change in January, it wasn't about the VIX and volatility. It was about a change in stance at the Fed, where they're going to step aside and the bond market's going to have to find its real equilibrium. And that typically means higher rates a little bit, which is not good for stocks. And so I think the equity markets are in for some serious volatility this year.
Yeah, I too think this is going to be. But, you know, one of the things, Harry's book, The Greatest Sale, is, you know, we're getting that time period in his book where he predicted somewhere between 14 and 19, we're going to have a market correction. So are you guys thinking it's more going to be into 19 or possibly into the end of 18 or maybe even out to 2020?
Well, Harry's always said, you know, the 14 to 19 range, and clearly it hasn't happened yet. We did not think the Fed would be able to print $4.5 trillion worth of bonds without a bad effect. They did. But the timing of the downturn, of course, is always the question. Harry has been looking at this year and thinking that perhaps it's coming with the Fed out of the way, and his technical charts, he's more on a technical chart pattern, and right now it's this pennant, kind of a sideways triangle. And so if the market breaks above, then we could go, you know, another 3,000 or 4,000 points higher before it rolls over. But if it breaks down, then clearly it should fall dramatically. And so he's looking for that to prove itself out sometime before May, really. And so we're talking about the next 6 to 8 weeks, we could find out that direction from that technical chart. I look at things more fundamentally. And I, as you know, I've been kind of in this muddle along. It's kind of growing a little weakness, a little risk, but still we're kind of plodding forward and higher. And in late January, I started telling people, nope, I believe that we are looking at a risk of significant drop here. Not 50, 60%, but a significant drop, with the most important piece that it doesn't bounce right back. This doesn't become a V-shaped recovery where, like in January to early February, drops like a rock, comes back, and everybody goes, wow, that was kind of intense, and then they move on. This will be a drop where people go, wait a second, do we really want to price these stocks at 18, 20 times earnings and the high flyers at 100, 200 times earnings? Maybe we want to do something else. And that's when people are going to see that they have to do something different with their money. They can't just let it sit and hope it grows, because it's been that way for the past several years.
Yeah, and you're not going to make any money getting 20 basis points or 1% at the bank.
This is where security selection and management are going to play the biggest role. People were able to put money in equities and just kind of let it roll there, even through some volatility, 2011, late 15, early 16, and a little bit in 2012. But this one's going to be different, where you kind of exhaust the run in the market. And the key is going to be GDP doesn't drop dramatically. If you see GDP kind of continuing along, 2-ish percent, inflation around 1.7 to, you know, 1.9%, that gives the Fed what they need to keep raising rates and shrinking their balance sheet. And the key in this is the Federal Reserve chairs have said equities are elevated. They're telling you straight up that they believe equities could come down, and of course they won't say how much, and we're still okay. And back to my wife, right? The Fed chairs have told you, here's my card, they can come down and we'll still be okay raising rates.
Yeah, they've told you what they're holding in their hand and what they're going to do, so you better be aware of it.
If we don't pay attention, it's our fault.
Yeah, absolutely.
We should be preparing now.
Well, speaking about paying attention, any of our listeners out there, on our website, we have a link that you can go to and you can order Rodney's free newsletter, Economy and Markets Daily. And I got to tell you, I like the thing you and Harry are now doing on your little reports, because like on the debt research report, I happened to see Rodney live on a video, which was great. Because I always enjoy your wit, but I enjoy seeing you provide it. And it was, I like the new stick you're doing with like a radio show.
Well, thank you. We realize that the written word is good, but some people would rather just click on the video while they're doing other things and kind of listen to that. And our senior research analyst, Dave Oakenquist, I hired him, I want to say, in 2010 out of college. Been with us quite some time now, and very well versed in what's going on. And he knows the different people involved, myself and Harry Dent and John DelVecchio and Lance and the others. And so he's a good host for the show, and I believe it gives us.
Whoops. Are you there, Rodney? We lost the connection. Uh-oh. We lost, I think Rodney went out of area. So anyway, Michael, I'll see if you can connect back up with Rodney. But for our listeners out there, okay, is he back?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Wow. What did you? Are you on a sailboat and you get out of area?
I would like to say that was my fault, but I'm in the same place on the same landline that I've been the whole time. I think somebody in your control room hit a button while they were eating a donut or something. I don't know, but we'll see.
Well, I hope they're not in there eating donuts and drinking coffee, because I'm not getting any.
I know. I was thinking the same thing. If they're going to do that, they could share.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, I got to say, you guys are doing a great job on this. I love the fact that now you've added the videos. And it's really great to see you actually talk. And one of the things our listeners, just so our listeners know, you and Harry purposely have told us no script. You don't want to know any questions before you come on the air. You want us just to fire from the hip and ask you a question, and you guys will answer from the hip. And I don't think most people, I think most people think it's probably staged. We have these questions we're going to ask you, and you know, but you have no idea what I'm going to ask you.
No, and every once in a while you throw me for a loop, but as you might imagine, and the people listening know, you know, if you read more than one newspaper, and I read, you know, my job is research, and so I read several papers a day, you can skip through number two fairly quickly, because a lot of it's the same as number one, and number three is like just flipping pages, because it takes a while to get to something new, because the main stories are exactly that, they're the main stories. And so, you know, I had no idea what you were going to ask, but you asking about trade tariffs, of course, and Larry Kudlow and different things, they all make sense because it's what's in the news today. But every once in a while, Chuck, you'll come out with something that's like, hey, wait a second, I got to think a little bit harder about that one. We like to go unscripted and treat it just like the listeners. If you don't know what's coming, then you get the real answer.
Well, you had a little referral to baseball a little bit back, and I'll tell you, I just spent a couple of weeks down at spring training watching the Mariners and the Dodgers, my two favorite baseball teams. I grew up being a Dodger fan, and then when the Mariners came to the Northwest, they became my American League team, and I got my National League team as the Dodgers. And I got to tell you, Rodney, if you've never went to spring training, it is a kick. It is a lot of fun. And I don't know if you've ever done that. I think you like baseball, but I think if you've never done it, you really want to do it.
You know, I agree with you, Chuck, and I was fortunate. I lived in Tampa for 12 years, and of course, Tampa is the home of Yankees spring training. And so I had several Yankees and ex-Yankees that lived in my neighborhood, and I would love to say they were my next-door neighbor. They were not. They lived in very expensive houses on the water, and I was not close to them, but, you know, I don't know, 1,000 yards. So, but anyway, so we had a lot of baseball in Tampa because of that. And of course, the Phillies are over in Clearwater and two or three others right there in Florida. And you would go to these spring training games, and as you mentioned, they're fun because things happen that you don't expect, because the managers are willing to put in players in different positions even than you normally see, and they switch out pitchers quite frequently because the goal isn't to win the game exactly, it's to see who's got what and where they fit. And so you do see interesting things at spring training. training, and they're not as crowded. That's what I really like. I mean, it's more like old-time, almost small-town baseball, even though there's a few thousand people there. And it's just fun.
Oh, and you're right on the field. I mean, you're really close to the field, not like when you go to a big league game. You are really close to the players. You can hear them yelling, you know, and stuff. And I went to an Angel Mariner game, and it was like playoff. It was 9,600 people, standing room only, and it was a kick. We sat in with half the people were Mariner fans, half the people were Angel fans, and it was just like a big party. Everybody was
9,600 people in a in a training facility stadium. It wasn't like you were in Dodger Stadium, right? You
know, it was packed. It was packed. Yeah, and it's just a lot of fun. So, any of our listeners out there, if you retired or if you're not retired or semi-retired, take a trip. Go do spring training one time at least. I went a few years ago and I got hooked. Now I go every year.
There you go.
Yeah, well, Rodney, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much. I hope things are continue going well. And keep doing the good work. You guys are putting together some really good stuff for our investors. And I just encourage people to go and check out and join Dent Research, because there's a lot of stuff here that people can use. And besides that, they get to see your face every week.
And now they'll hear me on video with, Dave Oakenquist, our senior research analyst, who's doing such a great job. And so they'll get a couple of people. It'll be fun.
Well, you guys have some fantastic people at Dent Research, no question about it. Absolutely. And listen, any news on the Economic Summit for this year?
Economic Summit for this year, it's down in Austin, Texas. And, of course, Lacey Hunt is based in Austin, so he'll be back as usual. And we're actually getting together our list or cast of characters right now. But Austin in the fall should be a lot of fun.
Oh, man, I am coming to that one, I can tell you, because I love Austin. Austin is a great town.
And, it is a great town.
And it's on the West Coast, which I love.
Well, it's kind of in the middle. We'll take
it's kind of in the middle, but it's
closer
than Orlando.
Florida, you bet.
Yeah. Well, listen, thanks, Rodney. We'll be talking to you next month.
Thank you, Chuck. Bye-bye.
Thanks. We'll take a quick break and come right back with Investing Simplified. And the tax investigator and I are going to tear apart myths about taxes. We'll be right back.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Colson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercolson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercolson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Colson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask Kevin Stege, CPA and shareholder of the Baker Colson CPA firm, that tax question that's been keeping you up at night. You can call Kevin 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the CPA with the tax answers, Kevin Stege.
Well, hello, Chuck. How are you? Well, hello, Chuck. How are you?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Are we there?
Okay. Well, you're out of the cave.
I'm in the cave. I'm in the back of the cave right now.
Okay.
Yes, calling from the back of the cave. Well, that was a good segment by Rodney. Good word for the future, I think.
Well, listen, I just had an explosion of phone calls and emails this week, because last Saturday when you and I was talking about and people had called in about the move from Oregon, moving over to Washington to retire, the time limits and stuff, And I just had so many people call me and say, hey, we stayed to listen to that, and you guys never got back to it. And we're sorry because we got too many callers. And right now we do have a caller, but we're going to kind of talk about this a little bit first and then get right to our caller. But and all of you are welcome to call in and ask Kevin any questions you have specifically about this. 503-417-9595, toll-free 877-733-1011. But, Kevin, let's talk about the tax advantages or the no tax advantage of moving from Oregon to Washington. And the one case that the person had called and asked about was we had a person who was living in Oregon and was going to make the move to Washington, and how long did they have to move to Washington before they could not have to pay the Oregon income tax?
Right, right. Well, yes, I had that same ripple in the space-time continuum regarding that segment. There's a number of people that wanted to hear that info, so let's get right to it. I thought I'd start with just addressing the basic principles so that they can be applied generally to our listeners' situation. And then, obviously, you look at the details of each situation further. But in general, there's this concept called domicile, and that's what basically determines what state or where is your residency. And domicile is basically, we're talking legal terms here, so I know Carl, he'd get all excited here, but domicile is basically the place you consider to be your home and where you plan to return after an absence. So it's not, we're not talking a deep legal definition here, but intent is a big part of domicile, and so it's really a facts and circumstances type of thing, and characteristics, if you will, of what establishes your intent is. Say you have two places. Say you have a place in Oregon and a place in Washington. Well, the taxing authorities don't know which house you're considering your domicile. You would probably want it to be Washington for income tax purposes, maybe not. But if this is a question that comes up, here's some of the facts that they look at, the characteristics that they look at to determine where your domicile is. And it starts with where do you spend more of your nights? Where do you consider yourself to be a resident? Where do you generally shop for your groceries? Where's your driver's license issued from? Where do you vote at? So those are all types of things that help determine what your domicile is. And I thought I would talk a bit about a court case that went through the Oregon Tax Court. And interestingly enough, this is a case that the taxpayer represented himself, and they won. And he had a very good argument, and he presented a pretty persuasive set of circumstances, and the judge felt that, yes, indeed, this taxpayer had established Washington domicile and was not domiciled in Oregon. Now, just before I get into that court case, one final thing. Once you establish your domicile where your residency is, that doesn't change until basically three things happen. You have intent to leave the old domicile, you have an intent to acquire a new domicile somewhere else, and you are physically present in that new domicile. So, we've got a lot of intent, and the thoughts of the heart and the mind are sometimes difficult to prove in court, wouldn't you say, Chuck?
Absolutely.
That's right. So this court case is very interesting. This is a husband and wife who lived in Oregon for many years, and they decided to buy a business in Washington. And it was a pretty significant business. I believe it was an elevator business, had employees, had all sorts of stuff going. And so for about 4 years, they went to Washington and ran this business. It was not a good business. It just didn't work out. The business had struggled for 3 years, but one of those years it showed a profit. And of course, once you show profit, all of a sudden they get a knock on the door from Oregon Department of Revenue, and they show up and they say, "Howdy, friend. We hear you got profits." So the Oregon's going to maybe want to see if they should get a portion of those profits, have it taxed as Oregon income. And so basically Oregon said, no, you were actually an Oregon resident. And Oregon had a very good point. And frankly, if I were the Oregon Department of Revenue, I would have seen it the same way, because the taxpayers did not sell their Oregon home. They did not change their driver's license. They did not change their voting record. In fact, they voted in 2012 in Oregon. You know, they still own the Oregon house, and they'd never bought a Washington house. But they rented in Washington during these 4 years, and after the business failed, they ended up moving back to Oregon. So it appears to me, and maybe Oregon, hey, these are Oregon residents this whole time, and this business income should be taxed to Oregon. But the other side of the story is a little more compelling, and that is they had a very hard time selling their Oregon home for a reasonable price. They had a very difficult time finding the right home in Washington for them. And their business consumed all of their time, and it still failed. And they had many different facts that they presented about the business of union disputes and just all sorts of stuff. And the judge was persuaded. The court was persuaded that they intended to move to Washington, and that was their intent. And therefore, representing himself, Mr. Bentley won in the Oregon tax court, saying I wasn't an Oregon resident. So very good case to lay out what the facts and circumstances are of how domiciled is established.
And it gives you a little faith that the judge would actually listen to the person's problems and what they were trying to overcome.
That's right. Absolutely right. And so on a more practical basis, for us everyday folks who maybe aren't buying and selling businesses and such, in general, Oregon is going to tax, when you're an Oregon resident and you're domiciled in Oregon, Oregon is going to tax all of your Oregon income and all of your income everywhere. Now, if you move out of Oregon, Oregon is only going to tax Oregon-sourced income, and as a part-year resident, Oregon taxes only income earned in Oregon or received from Oregon sources when you are a non-resident. So basically, on the day you can establish that you've moved out of Oregon, say it's January 1st to May 31st, you're an Oregon resident, June 1st, you moved into your new house, you can, in Washington, you can pretty well establish that is your cutoff date. Day of June 1st forward, you're Washington, and you flip over to the part-year resident and non-year resident rules. So that hopefully should answer the question from our emailer or our listener of when you make your cutoff as an Oregon resident to a Washington resident. And it can be pretty significant. I mean, at 9% or 9.9%, that's a pretty good tax on income, that if you hop over to Washington, yes, you do have other taxes. You do have sales taxes. You do have use taxes, those things. So it's something you definitely want to consider and plan, and there's other non-tax purposes to consider in all of that also.
Okay. Kevin, we're going to take a quick break and come right back. Callers, if you've got a question about this, this is your opportunity. We've got about 10 minutes. Pick up the phone, call, and ask your question. This is your opportunity. 503-417-9595, toll-free 877-733-1011. We'll be right back with the tax investigator.
Hi, I'm Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and co-host of the radio program Investing Simplified. I recently left the Warren Allen Law Firm to open my own office. Professional and personable service have always been the hallmarks of my practice. I believe that this move will allow me to spend more time with my clients. For more than 37 years, it has been my privilege to assist clients with practical estate planning with wills, trusts, powers of attorney, advance directives, and other documents so that they may have peace of mind knowing that their affairs are in order. When probate becomes necessary, emotions of family members may become fragile. Having an experienced attorney that can empathize with what the client is going through makes the process much easier. My new office is conveniently located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 101, just across from Mall 205, and my phone number is 971-229-0585. That's 971-229-0585.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that tax question answered. Call Chuck or Kevin now at 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's Chuck Price and Kevin Stege.
All right, are we on?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can
okay.
hear you, Chuck. There you are.
Okay. We've got a caller on the line, Brian, and he's got a question about Washington, Oregon residency. Are you there, Brian?
Yes, I am. Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning.
Love the program. Love to drive around Saturday morning in Vancouver, drinking coffee and listening to your financial program. It's very interesting.
Thank you very much.
You bet. I was listening to the Oregon-Washington situation there. I just wanted to chime in and say that I am almost retired, but I still work for a very large insurance company. I'm fortunate that I work from home. And so I only have to go into the office in downtown Portland one day a week. When they started working from home, I lived in Washington, I got an immediate raise because I did not have to pay Oregon income tax, on 4 days a week. So I only had to pay one day a week of Oregon tax. And the other 4 days, I worked from home, so I was not subject to Oregon tax. So when I started working from home, I immediately got a raise. So I thought that might be interesting to your listeners.
Absolutely, Brian. That's a great thing that many folks don't know about. In exactly as you described it, basically, your W-2 potentially comes showing all of your wages subject to Oregon income tax, and maybe they allocate for you. But even if they do that, you can still take 4 out of 5 days and show it on your tax return, on your Oregon tax return, as a Washington resident physically working in the state of Washington. That is not subject to Oregon income tax, and you're absolutely right that that is not taxable to Oregon. So that's a great point that you bring up there, Brian.
Yeah, that's how my company works. I let them know that, and they allocate for that. Hey, great show, guys. Thanks much, and we'll see you in the future, okay?
Great. Thanks for your input. That was very good. Listen, Kevin, I got a caller on the line who's got a question, who wanted to correct something Rodney said on the earlier segment. So, Jack, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning.
Rodney, from my point of view, made a pretty big mistake that needs to be corrected when he was talking about the Enron situation. He said that the accounting firm KMPG blew up. There never has been a firm by the name of KMPG. He was thinking of KPMG, and it did not blow up. It's thriving and alive today. What he was thinking of and somehow did not identify was Arthur Andersen.
You're exactly correct, by the way. You're exactly correct.
Which, by the way, needs to be pointed out, Arthur Andersen was completely exonerated after they were blown up.
Yeah. Unfortunately, which happens a lot of times when government gets involved, they go after the wrong people and ruin lives, unfortunately. In this case, they made a big mistake.
I worked for the predecessor of KPMG in the 1980s, and it just so happens that KPMG picked up most of Arthur Andersen's offices and clientele after they were forced out of business.
Yep.
But I just wanted maybe the word to get back to Rodney that he identified the wrong company as the one that failed and blew up.
Oh, I will definitely send him a note and let him know. Yeah. But I think that's that hot sun that he's used to living under.
Yeah, it's the sailboat.
Kind of fries the brain, you know. Yeah. Yeah, thank you. But very good points, Jack. You're exactly right.
All right.
Yep, thank you very much. And that, and that's what's great about our show, because if something gets said, we can have people call in like Jack, and we really appreciate Jack correcting that situation, because, you know, we're here busy running the show, and we're going to, you know, I'm not going to correct Rodney when he's on the air, but we really appreciate that, right, Kevin?
That's right, absolutely.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes we learn stuff from callers, so it's a two-way street. Well, Kevin, one of the other things that a person asked me about, and I'm going to tell you my analogy of it, but I told them they needed to run it by a CPA. But my feeling was they actually lived in Oregon for, they're going to live in Oregon for 6 months, and then sometime in the month of June or July when school's out, they're going to try to sell their house and move to Washington, and then become Washington residents.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them, now they're going to retire, but I told them, I said, listen, the income you're making while you're in Oregon that first 6 months, there's no way you're going to get out of not paying Oregon income tax on that money, because you were an Oregon resident and you earned the money in Oregon, and you're going to have to pay your income tax on the stuff that you earned in Oregon that first 6 months of the year.
That's right. Even if you're a Washington resident working in Oregon, you're going to pay, physically working in Oregon, you're going to pay Oregon income tax.
Yeah, there's just no way out of that.
Yep. Yep.
Not unless you want to go to jail. No.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, the one of the planning strategies is sometimes is like retirement income. By retiring across the river, if you will, into Vancouver or maybe Prune Hill in Camas is a kind of a popular area. Basically, what people are doing there is, and this was a case that I know we have very short time here, so I'll keep it short, but Illinois took this, they really litigated this hard. You have all of these professional partnerships, these attorney firms, these accounting firms in Chicago, and these folks were making a lot of money. They were deferring a lot of this money into retirement accounts, and then these people were retiring to Florida and sunny states, and then withdrawing, you know, hundreds of thousands off their retirement accounts, these executives, in tax-free states. And Illinois was like, no, that's not going to happen. And Illinois fought all the way to the Supreme Court and lost. And so that established for basically all of us that the state in which you are a resident, when you receive your retirement income, and this is generally the case, I'm sure there's a specific product or instance that may be different, but generally the state that you're living in, that you receive your retirement income in, that's the state that's going to tax it, whether they have an income tax or not. So that's generally what people are looking at in terms of tax savings when they move across the river.
I have not heard yet if California or any of the states have actually started going after their state employees or school teachers who have moved to other states if they don't pay on their CalPERS taxes and pay to California.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be able to do that. I believe this case has established that if a California person retires up to Oregon, that's going to be, Oregon rightfully gets to tax that. And you, even if California tries to tax it, you'll get a, I mean, there's a credit on your Cal return for taxes you already paid to Oregon. So you won't get double taxed, that's for sure. And I think the resident state is going to carry they're going to have precedent on taxing that income in general.
We got a minute, Kevin. How's somebody get a hold of you?
All right, Chuck. We're at baker-colson.com, 503-666-5569.
Okay, and if you want to get a hold of Carl Jepson, you can reach him at 971-229-0585. Carl Jepson, attorney at law. And you can reach me at pfgwm.com or 503-253-3000. God bless you all, and have a very safe week. And enjoy the nice weather, because I heard we're supposed to have a little nice weather this week, maybe. So enjoy it and take care of yourself. God bless you, and watch the markets.
Listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000 or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, it can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.